We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand. Joining me, as always, over there in sunny New York City, my man, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I wore a short sleeve shirt to the office today, Ty.
Whoa, that's a big step.
It's huge. It's huge. I'm feeling great. Oh, Ty, it's 2 weeks of spring. That's all it is. That's all we have. But spring ball is over. And we have a new concept today.
We do have a new concept. What we're going to do, okay, so we've been doing this thing once a month where we do question and answer. We solicit questions from the Verballerhood. You send them in via email at solidverbal@gmail.com or Twitter at solidverbal, of course, is the handle, Facebook, Reddit, you name it, the whole nine yards.
Correct.
But, you know, sometimes we tend to get so caught up in what others are asking that we don't just have an opportunity to talk amongst ourselves, to really have a dialogue among friends, which I think is why a lot of people like to listen to this show. Am I right?
We're giving the Verballersphere a week off.
Given the Verballersphere a week off, actually 2 weeks off, if we're going to peel back the curtain a little bit more. But you've got some questions for me, some burning questions that you've been meaning to ask me for God knows how long now. I don't know how long you've been repressed in this state, but before us, we've got a list of questions that you pondered up this week that I think you'd like to throw my direction.
Yeah, I always have these questions for you, and I always forget to ask them, or there are just ways that I look at the sport in kind of a dumb way, but I like to bounce things off of you. So this is the Dan Q&A week, and then next week will be the Ty Q&A week, and then maybe after that we'll do some sort of drafts, debriefing from a college level and process level, if that makes sense. Is that okay?
That sounds delightful, yes.
Oh, I'm so glad we're on the same page. There hasn't been a ton of news. Is there any news that you wanted to discuss? Anything? I mean, we talked about Daniel Jones, right?
We talked about Daniel Jones, all right. No, what I wanted to talk about, actually, and we don't have to spend too much time on this, but Tommy Stevens.
That's
we did
true.
Not have time to discuss on this show because of the draft and all sorts of other stuff going on. Tommy Stevens deciding that he wants to transfer out of Penn State.
This is the post-spring transfer, I'm not definitely starting transfer window.
That is precisely what's going on. But Tommy Stevens, long thought to be perhaps the front runner for the starting quarterback job up at Penn State, has decided he's not gonna roll the dice in state college because Sean Clifford's a guy, four-star recruit.
Is that who it's going to be for sure?
It seems like he would be the heir apparent at this point.
Okay.
Sean Clifford. A lot of folks were pretty high on Sean Clifford. was apparently not a slam dunk that Tommy Stevens was going to get that job. So now he is keeping his options open. He's looking elsewhere. Kentucky is a school I saw popping up. Mississippi State, maybe reuniting with Joe Moorhead. Don't know if either of those make a ton of sense, but hopefully it works out for him, because certainly he put in his time in State College hoping to get that job and had some injuries. So yeah, we'll see. That's really the only notable thing from my end.
Dabo Swinney is everywhere. I think he threw out the first pitch in Milwaukee today, was at the Raptors game last night as we record this on a Wednesday, just playing some pickup on the court.
Also, Dabo Swinney may have purchased all of the Azores.
He's doing well. He's doing well for himself.
Just
actually,
FYI.
I'm going to use Dabo to get into our first Dan Q&A queue. He's had himself a good week, though.
He's had a very good week. Do I play the email sound? What is the deal for this?
We discussed this over GChat. It's close enough.
Congratulations, Skippy. You've got mail.
You've got mail on the Solid Verbal.
So again, as often as we can, we like to pay homage to the people who write in. SolidVerbal@gmail.com, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you name it. All Friendster, OK Cupid, plenty of fit. I don't know. I'm just rattling things.
Christian Mingle,
off.
Yeah, Farmers Only, all of the above.
But
have you ever heard of Raya?
Raya?
Raya.
No, I haven't.
R-A-Y-A.
No.
I think it's a very exclusive dating app for famous people and influencers, and you have to get really pre-approved. It's like quadruple factor checking.
Okay.
And neither one of us were invited when we were single. No. So
not on that one.
If even we can't, you know how exclusive it must be.
That's
so
true.
Maybe we're on Raya, but we wouldn't know.
All right. Where are we going first, Dan? What is your first burning question for me?
Okay. So first burning question is, we now know that Dabo Swinney is / will be the richest coach in football. 10 years, $93 million if everything hits, kind of thing.
Wow.
In college football. But who is college football's most valuable, not richest, most valuable Power 5 coach, which basically to me means which 8+ win team, yeah, about that, could most easily backslide because of geography, school commitment, the conference they're in, whatever.
Okay.
Into consistently a not bowl team if they were to leave and be replaced by the most average college football coach. Also, who's the most average college football, active Power 5 college football coach?
The most average Power 5 college football coach is something that we did discuss on GChat.
And how would you interpret that, by the way?
We can't bring that up momentarily. I don't want to bury the lead, though. Let me try to answer your question.
Who is the most valuable? Who gives their team 3 to 4 wins because of how well they hire and strategize and raise money and recruit and adjust and interact with their players, keep their players from transferring, that kind of thing? Who do you think over time is that value?
All right. Well, two names that jump off the page at me.
Okay.
I think the best answer is Kyle Whittingham at Utah. He has...
That's pretty good. There's good talent in Utah, but yeah.
Third longest tenure in FBS behind the immortal Kirk Ferentz and Gary Patterson. He is 120-61 overall at Utah, and most importantly, 11-2 in bowl games. So he is a guy who, we joke about it every year, but Utah finds a way to win 8 or 9 games. And you don't ever see it coming, but by and large, he's going to do that.
So Mountain West school that makes the leap and seems to become even more consistent, though they're not winning 11 a year like they were at the end of the Mountain West tenure.
Correct. So Whittingham is I think choice A. Choice B might be Pat Fitzgerald. He's an interesting selection here, kind of in the same vein as Kyle Whittingham.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, there is much more institutional support now than when he showed up, and he's a large reason why.
You could very much make a case that if it's not Pat Fitzgerald coaching at Northwestern, they backslide into being a non-bowl team. And then the final one, even though he doesn't quite have the tenure of the previous two, Matt Campbell at Iowa State.
That's a great answer.
Matt Campbell at Iowa State, he's gotten to 8 wins. If he's not at Iowa State, Iowa State's not going 500.
If we were on Family Feud right now and I were standing next to you, good answer. They really do encourage you to do that. I would add David Shaw.
I thought about Shaw.
There is something so maddeningly consistent about what he's done at Stanford, where the down years are 8-9 wins. And even though Harbaugh before him had equal, if not greater, success and was the one to pull them out, we know the depths of Stanford. We know the challenge of putting together a roster of 85 players who meet academic requirements. They have to recruit nationally. You know, we've seen David Shaw go all over the country, Virginia, Georgia, Texas, to get these enormously successful players, develop them into NFL players, deal with the fact that a lot of times he can't secure commitments while everybody else can because they're waiting for grades. A lot of these guys are borderline to get into the school. And so I think that kind of thing could cause panic. And the fact that David Shaw has not only kept up the success, but has just secured an unbelievable program for Stanford is, I think he's right there in terms of value.
What's interesting about him relative to Harbaugh, Harbaugh came in and built that program, or mm-hmm. at least laid the foundation for that program from the ground up. Since David Shaw took over, because of those academic requirements, that mm-hmm. added layer of complexity at Stanford, I don't want to say that he's been elitist. I don't mean that. He is definitely, though, steered into a vague elitism that comes along with their academic standards.
Given a TED Talk, yeah.
He's done the TED Talk. He has steered into that quality of Stanford football and Stanford as a whole that has actually been quite impressive. He has not at all shied away from some of their institutional requirements, and you could make a real strong case for him making that program better because of it.
And think about all of the top flight assistants that... have Mike Sanford and Derek Mason that have gone on to be head coaches or top coordinator, Lance Anderson, guys that have gone on to success that he has replaced with, I think Tavita Pritchard is their new offensive coordinator. Okay. So he entrusts a younger generation. There's a lot to love about how he's kept them not just afloat, but thriving. Even Derek Mason is in that conversation that Vanderbilt is a consistent bowl team. I know playing for non-conference games sort of bolster a lot of these value coaches. Mark Stoops, I think, has to be because of where we've seen Kentucky, the depths they fell to with Joker Phillips.
If Kentucky's not in the SEC, he's probably turning in a better win-loss record.
I would probably submit Mike Leach. And Washington State has had a pretty good history of relative success, but we do know that it's easy for Wazoo with an underwhelming hire, let alone an average hire, for things to go wrong if everything else in the Pac-12 is pretty competitive. So the fact that he has them at 8-9 wins, I think,
all right,
that's crazy impressive. So I think that's where the value is.
A lot of valuable coaches. Now, on to more pressing matters.
Yes.
College football's most average coach.
Okay. How do you interpret that that statement?
You need to consistently field a team that is good enough to maybe pull an upset, but also bad enough to lose to a team that you never really should.
Right. There's a certain degree of competence that, like, yes, there are definitely strings of disappointing games, but at the same time, you show flashes where you're like, oh, well, somebody in this organization, probably him at times, knows what they're doing.
Right.
And so I don't necessarily think they have to be a 500 coach, because sometimes schools like Derek Mason has done a pretty good job at Vanderbilt and they're kind of at 500, and that's fine for Vanderbilt. I don't think that makes him average.
No, the record does not make an average coach, but a record that's around average with the other prerequisites,
right,
is a cherry on top. So,
like, would you say Jeff Brohm is an average coach? I think he's above average.
He's above average. He's above average.
He's been around 500 these past couple of years.
Okay. So what I'm looking at here is a coach who has had some big moments mixed in over the last four seasons.
Yeah.
But there was also a quarterback situation about 2 years ago, which was not one of those bright spots at all.
Yeah.
And definitely gave us cause for pause, our celebrity charity.
Yep.
This gentleman is 28 and 24 in four seasons. He has 2-8-5 records, as well as 2-5-7 records
okay.
in his last two seasons. I think we came to a unanimous agreement that college football's absolute average coach absolute average is Pat Narduzzi at Pitt.
I think it. That's right. I think it's Pat Narduzzi. Pat Narduzzi.
Every coach, if we are going to argue on the scale of average or not average, needs to be graded against Pat Narduzzi, at least in 2019.
I think it's the louder the exhale is before a fan reacts to the question, how is your coach? So if you asked a Pitt fan, a random array of Pitt fans, what do you guys think of Narduzzi?
I think that's right. Yeah.
I think they start with a, I mean, he's all right. I think there is that exhale. The other coach that I think is in that category of meeting expectations 37% of the time, I think it's Kevin Sumlin.
Okay. I could see Kevin Sumlin.
He was the proto Brom in that, oh my God, look what he's doing right away. And oh, are we going to lose him? And then he just sort of settled into underachieving, but not completely like they would always go 8-5, right? That's not a disaster. No matter where you are, that's not a disaster. Even if Alabama started going 8-5, that's not okay. Maybe at Alabama, but at Texas A&M, going 8-5 is not, you know, an emergency.
Right.
So I understand getting tired of it, moving on, and there are other issues, obviously, but I think a Pat Narduzzi, Kevin Sumlin, I don't know why I keep thinking about Purdue and Jeff Brohm, I guess because Kevin Sumlin went there. Is there anybody else to you? Like, is Will Muschamp, he might be an average coach.
I don't know.
He might be a very average coach. Like, he did
There's a chance.
The surface at Florida where they win the SEC East. They get to a kind of big bowl game.
All right.
I'm trying to, is there, who's the most average Pac-12 coach? Is it Clay Helton?
It's got to be Clay Helton.
He's underwhelmed. He's overachieved. He's recruited all, you know, to be expected with the USC replacement level.
All right.
Yeah, I think it's Clay Helton. And the funny thing about both Helton and Narduzzi, they're both in my Hudson News All-Stars of you would never recognize them if they were buying mints in an issue of Variety.
Never in a million years.
In a Hudson News.
You would never recognize Clay Helton without a hat on.
No. Oh, my God, no.
He could have hair. He could have a mohawk. I have no idea.
Okay, Ty, you're a Notre Dame fan.
Yes.
And I guess a lesser extent, Penn State fan. And the reasons that you are a Notre Dame fan and a Penn State fan, you were born in the Northeast-ish, I guess. Do you consider the Allentown area Northeast?
This is the Northeast, yes.
Okay. You're born in the Northeast. Family's Catholic. You attended the college in your state, the state college. And so, therefore, you have Notre Dame and Penn State loyalty. Your family, you were born into a Notre Dame family. And thus, you were fans of these teams. You didn't really choose. You chose to go along with it.
That's right.
But if you had an open choice, and I was inspired by, I have some friends who went to medical school and they do like the matching program.
Right.
Are you familiar with this?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So basically, if an app existed, an objective app on your phone, a computer, whatever, and it took into account a program's general aesthetic, the existing fan stereotypes, fair or not, and everything about your personality as a college football fan and just as a human, what school do you think the program would match you with?
Oh, like, wow.
Who are your people? Because if we're talking stereotypes, it's you're not old. You're not sort of tired in the Notre Dame stereotype-y way.
I mean, we're getting there, but no, not.
You're getting there. You're not dripping in tradition with everything you do.
No, I'm not.
You don't complain that things are not traditional enough. And with Penn State, there's an aggression there that I don't think you inhabit, stereotypically.
Yep. Right.
So, in your mind, who's your match?
This is an excellent question.
Thank you.
When you sent this one to me, this was one of those deals where I sat back in my chair and was like, ooh, okay. I went back through the Rolodex. I pulled out my Myers-Briggs personality type results just to really get a good gauge on what options we're looking at here.
Mm-hmm.
My Myers-Briggs personality type is ENTP. Now, if you're not familiar with Myers-Briggs,
not at all.
It's a personality test There have been articles written about it. It may or may not be accurate. Chances are it's not. But the answers it gives are at least intriguing. It's a source of much debate, but good conversation. ENTP says that I am an extrovert. Surprise, surprise.
That makes sense.
That relies on intuition. I think instead of sense, and I perceive instead of judge.
You're more mellow. Yep.
More mellow. Here is what, according to our friends over at ZipRecruiter, the best careers for me would be.
Okay. So you're going to try to, as an EMPT or whatever you are, you're going to try to match this.
I'm going to try to match this with a college football program.
Right.
All right. So number one, it says, I would be good at being a stockbroker.
Mm-hmm.
A stockbroker.
That's you.
I have picked some winners in my day.
Okay.
Other ones on here, an engineer, a lawyer, an operations manager. Okay. A relationship manager, a film producer, a PR specialist, and a training manager. Those are my eight careers, according to ZipRecruiter.
Yeah. I would say that you're a Big Ten school. I would say that you are, I would put you as like a Michigan man, probably.
I was thinking Ohio State, Michigan is probably
the most likely. No, I think you're much more Michigan. There's something that is kind of urban about Michigan. I think that's the answer for you.
How about
I think
you?
I'm a natural Colorado Buffalo.
Colorado, 100% for you.
I think I'm a natural Colorado Buffalo, where I'm more laid back, but there is something that is inherently, like, when I think about Michael Dyer's arm, that I, you know, Colorado and glory days and, you know, trying to sort of stay optimistic, but also stay in the past a little bit. And I think Colorado, outdoorsy, still pretty mellow. I think I'm a natural Colorado Buffalo.
I will go along with that. You've said that for a long time, too.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Next question, Ty. Oh, I like this one a lot. What are the best examples of a coach having a, you know what, this ain't it, sort of about face when he ditches his preferred way of playing?
Whoa.
Where it's like, this is how I like to do things, but it's clearly not working. Let's make this shift.
Isn't,
because I love when that happens.
Isn't this your entire hot take to a much greater degree about what's going to go on with Chip Kelly and UCLA after this season?
Well, I think that's partially on field, partially off field.
But yes, to some degree, right? You're kind of going this to the extreme with Chip Kelly. You think he's
I think
quit.
That might be more about his recruiting. Like his strategy behind the scenes, I think, needs to be evolving. And yeah. I don't think it has yet. I trust him just implicitly with regard to getting things done on the field. So,
okay.
I think so my answer would probably be like Gary Patterson.
Right.
And the shifts that he made on offense, especially when things weren't working a little bit into their Big 12 tenure after they did have a ton of success with Justin Fuente, and going to the Rose Bowl, winning the Rose Bowl, and when he went to Sonny Cumbie and Doug Meacham, I thought that was huge. Willie Taggart, sort of scrapping the Harbaugh West Coast offense at South Florida and going to the Gulf Coast thing, that worked really well. Marlon Mack was tearing everybody up.
By the way, Will Muschamp seeing the light was one of our fantasy selections.
Yeah, and they definitely improved on offense this past year.
I think Will Muschamp is another name.
He hired some duds early at Florida. Oh my
big
gosh.
Time.
The Kurt Roper and Charlie Weiss, not great.
Dabo Swinney sort of did this right out of the chute before he was even a head coach.
Yeah.
And now he gets paid more than Davy Crockett. There's value in being self-aware if you can pull this off. It also kind of feels like Gus Malzahn is executing an inverted version of this maneuver.
I was going to say, this is it, so let's change it.
It feels like he is going in the opposite direction in deciding to take over the play calling duties for this coming year.
Kyron Kevin Steele, I thought, was great.
Oh, yeah.
It was just offensively. Correct.
Okay. Some names there. Interesting discussion.
Yes, by all means, any of these questions, by the way, if you have an answer, please submit.
Yeah, hit us up.
All right, I like this question a lot because this is sort of evergreen. So because We're always going to have conversation about conference strength, quote unquote strength. That's just a reality. So do you, Ty, do you prefer the season-long product of a conference with a clear top-heavy hierarchy? So like two or four teams that are clearly above and beyond everybody else, and the everybody else is a mix of competent, incompetent, terrible, sometimes okay, whatever, but you have your ruling class.
Yeah.
Or do you like that wide open, everybody's competent, everybody's pretty good, you know, teams aren't going to shoot themselves in the foot, you know, there's talent, you know, there's quarterback play, you know, there's organization on defense, but you're never going to have the energy and hype of, oh, wow, in 2 weeks we have LSU Bama. Oh, my God, Florida State Clemson. Oh, boy, here comes Michigan Ohio State. Oh, man, USC Oregon. Which do you prefer? Do you like having that isolated hype and the energy that comes with those games of the century of the universe? Or do you want Wild West, whatever happens, happens. Oh boy, I'm seeing something on the ESPN bottom line that I did not expect. North Carolina's beating up on whoever, Florida State.
Right.
Got to get there. Didn't expect that.
Well, what's interesting about this, Dan,
mm-hmm.
you can make a really good case that the ACC is both.
Yeah, the ACC is everything. The ACC is an annual buffet.
The ACC really is both of these wrapped into one.
Yeah.
What you're really asking me, though, is if I prefer the Pac-12 or any conference that isn't the Pac-12.
Well, not this iteration of the Pac-12. I don't know who the hierarchy is. Washington's okay-ish.
No. I'm saying there is no hierarchy.
Right, currently. But I would argue there's not top-to-bottom competence.
That is also a fair point. Yeah. I am going with the top tier that keeps things interesting.
Okay.
I don't care so much if the only thing on the line is a berth to the Holiday Bowl. And
okay.
I love the Holiday Bowl.
You want stakes.
I want stakes. I want the game of the century.
Right.
I want a little bit more flavor to the games that I'm watching. I'm coming at this from the perspective of, I'm sure, like many college football fans who listen to this show, my team is Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
My team, also, Team B, if you want to call it that, is Penn State. The overwhelming majority of the games that I'm watching on a college football Saturday feature neither. So you got to give me a reason to watch. I've got the built-in reason of the podcast, but if I'm not watching from the podcast perspective, if I just want to be a fan, I want a reason to watch that game. Why am I setting aside 3 or 4 hours? You got to give me some meaning here. So
correct.
Give me option A, 2 to 4 teams, clearly head and shoulders above the rest.
Yeah, we had, was it 2017, 2016? The Big Ten did a really good job of having interesting, really good teams at the top. That would have been what? Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan State. Michigan had a down year a couple of years ago, but Wisconsin had a, what were they, 12-1, 13-1. Northwestern finished with 10 wins. So there was at least that element at the top, though week to week, you still had a terrible Rutgers, Maryland. I think Indiana was not great. Illinois was awful. And so that, I think, you need a higher floor than what the Big Ten did a couple of years ago. I think I like the Wild Wild West thing as my interest in the national championship. I need more than Holiday Bowl stakes. Although, Ty, don't besmirch the Holiday Bowl. The Holiday Bowl rules. It's outstanding. You get to go to San Diego in late December.
No, it's good. It's good during bowl season.
Does the stadium randomly get flooded?
Yes.
Possibly.
It does. Sometimes it does when Navy's playing. It can sometimes happen.
Yeah.
I love it during bowl season. During
right.
the regular season, it is not the crown jewel I am interested
right.
in.
I think I used to have an old bit on one of the video things that I used to do, like the Meineke car, the road to the Meineke Car Care Bowl. And you don't want that. You
no.
don't want that.
All right.
But where the SEC has been recently, I think is interesting with, in terms of at the top, could potentially beat everybody, maybe outside of Alabama, with the Mississippi schools rising up, with Georgia and Florida and, you know, Kentucky coming up into a really fun place, at least defensively. I think they've gotten to a pretty decent place where the bottom hasn't been awful, awful outside of Arkansas.
Agreed.
I don't think the SEC has had a Kansas, Rutgers, Oregon State, Illinois situation in the same way. So I at least like that. The ACC is in a bad place right now. Would you agree?
Not at the top, but...
No, I think they're in a bad place at the top.
Well, they've got Clemson, Dan.
They've got Clemson, but that's, I didn't say one good team.
Right.
Well, I said I want 2, 3, 4.
Dare I say Florida State is going to be Florida State before
you
long
should
under
dare
Willie
to
Taggart?
Say that, because that's a dumb thing to say right now. Who right now are you, if you are taking out a red pen, a red Sharpie, you're like, I can't wait for Clemson and blah-bitty blah. Who is your blah-bitty blah?
I don't know. Miami?
Maybe, eventually.
Eventually. Virginia Tech? I don't know.
You can't write maybe eventually on the circle.
I know.
Because I am not seeing that. I like that Clemson's going to the Carrier Dome, so that's a light pencil circle this year. But right now, I think the ACC is in a bad place.
All right. Hot takes.
I host a podcast called Sports Wars. I need some Sports Wars in the ACC.
Where are we going next?
Next question. Let's stay in that general region. So last year, South Carolina went through the middle part of their schedule. So like late September, October, early November, whatever. There were 5 games there. They played not the best, not the worst teams on their schedule. So this was not early season dumping. This was not Clemson late, who they actually played pretty well against. And each of those games, on average, was decided by a field goal, something like 3.1 or 3.2 points. And we used to refer to them as, or we did refer to them as, they were like the most competitive team. They were in so many games late. We were like, well, they're not going away, and they're not really good enough to put away these teams that are pretty good. So they're just competitive. And these were decent enough teams, Missouri and Florida, teams like that. So this year, when you look ahead, and I think, by the way, the net points per drive scored and allowed, like netted out to like 0.02. It worked out really, really well for South Carolina. So when you look at the 2019 season, who strikes you? And this, I guess, is in the same vein as the most average coach, but who is the team that they're pretty good? They're just not pretty or good. They're aggressively competent and competitive.
I think the answer is Iowa.
They're going to be in every game. They've got really strong linemen coming back on both sides. Okay. Nate Stanley.
Lose two tight ends, but Nate Stanley, mm-hmm. who I love, we love. Mm-hmm. I think the answer is Iowa here.
That's pretty good. I think it's Northwestern.
We both went Big Ten.
Yeah, we're going Big Ten. I think Missouri is an interesting answer.
Yeah.
I think they gave Georgia trouble last year. It was a game at halftime. I don't know of anybody that I would take right now. Cal's a half team, and I don't like taking a half team. Like, their defense is going to keep them in it, but their offense is going to sort of keep them out of a bunch of games. They were too lopsided last year. They'd win a game 15-10, but then they'd lose a game like 37-7. So I'm not down with Cal there. In the Big 12, I think, Iowa State's had some blowouts, but I think they have gotten to a point where it's going to be hard to comfortably beat Iowa State. We saw Oklahoma struggle these past couple of years, going 1-1. Last, Hakeem Butler had his way with some Oklahoma DBs. So I think Iowa State's a pretty good answer there, that they're just aggressively competent, which, like we mentioned earlier, step in the perfect direction for the Clones.
I think it's
by the
Iowa.
Way, the Nate Stanley thing, I'm going to load a list up right now, but I was talking about this with our pal Andy Staples before we did the SI Live draft night party thing that we did before during the first round. Who is 2020 Daniel Jones? Who is the quarterback?
Why do you keep bringing up Daniel Jones?
Sorry, I know. Are you still a Giants fan?
Barely.
Okay. Who is the 2020 quarterback that college fans will look at as like, that guy? This him? Who is that guy?
Man.
I'll give you, you know who Andy's answer was?
Who?
Felipe Franks.
Oh man, that's a good
big
answer.
Arm, great physical tools, athletic. I think Nate Stanley's on the list. Oh,
man.
You know who I think somebody could talk themselves into? Because I love Jake Fromm. I've liked him since day one.
Right.
I think people are going Jacob Eason.
Eason's one that jumps out at me.
He jumps out at like, he's going to make some wow throws if he wins the starting job
for
Washington.
If he's a starter.
He'll make some crazy throws and he'll finish seventh. He'll be the seventh or eighth most efficient Pac-12 quarterback. And somebody's going to talk themselves into Jacob Eason because of the measurables. Nate Stanley, I think, is in that conversation, but I think he's pretty good. I just wouldn't take him in the first round.
I guess right now, if I'm picking, Jake Eason is Jake interesting Eason. To me.
Oh, man.
I need more time with this one, though.
Little Brian Lewerke, looking at his efficiency metrics from 2017.
Man, you can't shine 2018, though.
Daniel Jones was there for a long time and had a lot of duds and went number six.
All right, next question. Give me
next question. Okay. Oh, this one's pretty good. Let's say you're a shady, I don't think you'll ever get to this point, but let's say you're a sort of shady, in the shadows, super wealthy fan. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Not a booster officially, but you're no stranger to facilitating under the table payments.
Okay. I like
blue
this.
Chip recruits.
Yeah.
You're a bag man.
I like
of
this.
Sorts. Let's say for the point of this exercise, all things are pretty even in terms of what your team needs. So aside from quarterback, if you are giving yourself a budget of $850,000, $1.2 million, $418,000, you give yourself a budget that you're going to contribute to helping to pay out whatever, families, specific guys, charities, whatever, whatever means you're going through. But you're budgeting what you like and what's important to you, where your money goes. Aside from quarterback, give me specific player archetypes that you feel most strongly about investing in.
I am sinking all of my money into building the 2.0 of Clemson's defensive line from 2018.
Okay.
All of my money. It might not be the super sexy plan, but it is, as we saw, an enormous...
You're not going out and getting a Jerry Jeudy.
No. It is an enormous competitive advantage. It stops the run. It affects the pass. Mm-hmm. It's part of what truly has set the SEC apart for all these years, defensive line play. Mm-hmm. Plus, if you can do what Clemson did and get three defensive linemen drafted in the first round, you better believe that moving
dividends.
Forward,
yep.
That's a position group that recruits itself long into the future.
Yeah.
So I go defensive line first and foremost. The way that it can change a college football game is something that you can't put a price tag on.
I've been scarred by a couple of pretty poor defensive coordinators, Ty, as an Oregon fan recently, the Don Pelham and the Brady Hoke eras. And thus, I've watched some bad linebackers.
Okay.
I shouldn't say bad linebackers. I mean, maybe they were, but bad linebacker play. And there is something about a just nails inside or middle linebacker, depending on the scheme you're running, gets everybody set, makes calls, you know, run stuffer, can drop into coverage. If I'm talking about somebody on the level of potentially Patrick Willis, Luke Kuechly, somebody like that, I think that's where I am just, all of the chips are going in that direction.
Get yourself like two or three Josh Allens. It's not a bad play.
No. I mean, he's sort of a stand-up edge rusher. But, yes, I need line. I mean, you watched the Ohio State-Oregon National Championship game.
I did.
Not a lot of Ezekiel Elliott tackling happening in that game with an incredible defensive line with Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner in front of them. So there is something immensely personal about developing that. Like, I want a neck roll. I want a lot of pointing and yelling. I want a lot of sideline towel waving. I want a lot of celebrations on batted balls. I want that captain anchor of a middle linebacker, inside linebacker. And if he presents himself, that's where I'm spending my cash.
Give me defensive line all day, every day.
Okay. Reasonable.
It's interesting that neither one of us took offense with this, though.
Yeah, I think you can develop receivers. I think running backs, the injury risk is pretty high. A Quentin Nelson type sure thing inside there, that's going to, especially if you are a team who's going to run a good amount, that's very attractive.
Yeah.
What, like the road grader, Ty?
Road grader, yeah.
You give me a Quentin Nelson type, I'm listening. I'm not hanging up the phone.
By the way, Dan, since we're talking about money and, you know, buying a position group.
Yeah, this is true.
Are your credit card bills keeping you up at night?
Sometimes, yeah.
You got interest
rates? I'm buying a lot of diapers, Ty.
You got interest rates in the double digits?
It's not great.
Be smart. Pay off your credit card balances with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. Get a fixed rate as low as 5.95 APR with AutoPay. You could save thousands in interest. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000. There are no fees. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Plus, LightStream is a division of SunTrust Bank, one of the nation's largest financial institutions. So you have complete peace of mind. If you want to save even more, our listeners can get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get the discount is to go to lightstream.com/solid. LightStream.com/solid. Of course, subject to credit approval, rate includes a 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/solid for more information.
Ty, can we make a quick announcement here?
Oh, did I know about this?
Talking, I think we're done talking college football for this show.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you have any other questions that you want to ask? Oh, no, actually, we have one more. One more.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
One more. Sorry for the tease. And then we're moving on.
Okay.
From college football to whatever, our other nonsense. We talked about how much we loved LSU's field.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about how the painted gradient eye is just so striking. And you love the 5-yard markers instead of 10-yard markers.
I do, yeah.
How it was just this unique quality when there's a lot of a homogenous nature to college football fields sometimes. And we actually got an email from somebody who used to work on the field
beautiful
crew.
Email. Thank you,
for
sir.
LSU.
Awesome.
Oh, amazing. And he agreed with us, for the record. He didn't correct us. He just gave us some more details that there's no set border for the eye. It's just sort of what happens when they're painting it. And it's an intricate process.
I love it. Beautiful chaos.
Yes. What other fields in college football to you? So anything between fans. So it could be, you know, if you love the hedges at Georgia, what fields to you are the most striking that visually just do it for you? Get your corneas all agog.
I would, Dan, if you'll indulge me.
Mm-hmm.
Like to construct my ideal field.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Your robo field.
We're not talking about stadiums, right? We're just talking about the field of
just
play.
Just the field of play.
The area,
yes.
The immediate area around the field of play.
Yeah, yeah. So like if a stadium has a track, like Washington used to have a track around, that's because they ran track and field. But if you like that visual, you're like, I like that throwback.
I think what you know about me is that I like things that stray a little bit from the norm. Maybe not as mm-hmm. much as you.
Right.
I like straying from the norm, and I'm all about sticking it to the man.
Yeah, that's you.
I'm sticking it to
Mr.
the man.
Mr. Rebel.
In an ideal world, give me the blue turf from Boise.
Wow. Okay, you're going for it.
Give me that sweet LSU Tiger gradient logo and the yard markings every 5 yards.
Mm-hmm.
I want the hedges from Georgia and Sanford Stadium. For my money, nothing better than a guy getting blasted into the hedges at Sanford Stadium.
Yep.
And
you have a bulldog on the field. That counts.
I didn't think of that, but yeah, sure.
Sitting on a mound of ice.
Yes.
So he doesn't overheat. Yeah.
I've got the Tennessee checkerboard in the end zone.
Love the checkerboards.
And because also, if we're going to talk
about...
And
the power tee in the midfield, yeah. And,
well, I've already got my...
I know.
Midfield,
but I'm just saying,
logo.
Tennessee's field aesthetic is terrific.
Give me the checkerboard in the end zone. And I don't know how sound fits into this equation. We're talking about bulldogs and live mascots, but sound has no dimension, Dan, so it's tough to say how it would fit into this equation. But I'm going to take the soundtrack from Lane Stadium.
Okay, I mean, that's not a turf situation.
I don't know how sound
fits
in. That's
acoustics. Okay.
Sound traverses
all. That is obviously great.
But if I could, I'm going to say Enter Sandman from Lane Stadium.
Do you have trouble with any of the fields with your vision?
Sometimes I do. Not going to lie.
Which ones?
I have trouble when it rains.
So what happens when it rains? What happens to your vision?
When the browns and the greens.
Oh, puddles really mess you up.
Yeah, like the typhoon games that we see, monsoon.
Yeah, so what does that look like to you?
It just all sort of looks the same.
It's a mess. Yeah, okay.
It's just like they're playing on a cow pasture, which isn't wrong per se. It's just tough for me to depict where the field stops and the football begins.
I love the shades of green, and that's obviously because I've been to and have watched so many Autzen Stadium games. But I love the sort of lighter, darker green alternating. And it's true at a number of stadiums.
Yeah,
that's,
I like
it's
that.
Nothing
that's nice.
Terribly unique to Autzen, but I do like that. I like how you can sort of keep track of yardage really easily that way on the fly. I think North Carolina's field, I think that Tar Heel blue that they line it with, I think it pops really nicely with the green turf.
Okay.
My number one's going to be the Rose Bowl field. I like how they paint the sidelines up until whatever point with the colors of the teams, and then you have that the dark end zones, it doesn't just say Michigan or USC, it's that, you know, they have the Michigan blue all throughout that end zone, and the cardinal of USC, whatever. There is something that is incredibly striking. You have the rose in the middle of the field. There is something just looking at that turf, and not even talking about the bowl, not even talking about the San Gabriel Mountains, the angle with which we watch, at which we watch the game, it's a pretty low angle, right? The Rose Bowl angle.
Yeah.
And you almost see blades of grass when you're watching it at, you know, I think ESPN probably what 50, 60 frames per second.
Yeah.
So there is something about the Rose Bowl that is so comforting turf wise. And I've walked on that turf before a couple of different Rose Bowls, and it's magic. And so that to me is probably my number one overall field. But elements wise, I think you nailed the other ones. I think LSU, Tennessee, the blue turf doesn't do as much for me, but I do like that sometimes birds land on it thinking it's a pond, thinking it's water. I enjoy that element of it. But outside of that, I think those are all of my answers.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm not going blue turf, I think I'm with you on the Rose Bowl. And you're right to point out the angle from which we watch the Rose Bowl as a television viewer.
Do you hate any fields or any elements of any fields?
Ooh.
Do you know what I absolutely loathe? And it's so terrible because I love watching the team and I love the tradition around the field and I love the colors and everything that happens. I hate Clemson's end zone.
Yeah.
So much. The Seraphs?
Really?
Seraph Clemson? Get out of here. I think it's awful. I think it's tacky and I hate it. I really do.
Fields that I hate. I need more time.
I hate the Clemson end zone. I don't know how I feel about the Notre Dame end zone. I think I'm mostly down on it.
I'm anti.
Yeah, I think I used to sort of like it, and now just like the slashes are just, it's there just to be there. Let's update.
There is a very simple quality to the Notre Dame field.
Right.
That I understand.
I like the turf of Notre Dame's field. Do they play on grass or do they play on turf?
No,
now?
It's turf now.
Yeah.
I like the simple nature of the field, and I can understand why people would be into that, but it doesn't do it for me. Give me the checkerboards.
And I don't think Notre Dame needs to go ostentatious with their end zones.
No, of course not.
Just add a little. Let's go a little bit. You know, if it were some sort of shamrocky design in there, I think that'd be great.
Listen, we've had
thoughtful
issues with
shamrocks.
We've had issues with the Shamrock series and the uniforms. I don't have any level of confidence that they could pull off the Shamrock in the end zone on the home
stadium. What about, Ty, stay with me here, pots of gold?
Pots of gold, like a zoo. It is the end of the rainbow, right?
Right.
Metaphorically speaking, I could go with that.
Thoughtful, classy pots of gold.
I think you're onto something there, Dan.
All right. I'm going to give it some more thought, but I think Notre Dame can do something with that.
I'm going to think more about stadiums I hate or fields that I hate.
All right, I think we're done with college football. So if you don't want to keep listening, thanks for the download. It's been a pleasure. Keep driving safely. Don't max out at the gym anywhere beyond where you're comfortable. Take a good nap on this flight. You've earned it.
Our friend Peter Hoffman might be on a flight. He sent us a message.
Oh, that's true.
He's going to be on a flight this weekend. Hello, Peter.
Ty, here's my first non-college football question.
Okay.
But it's sort of related to college football. If your future son or daughter is recruited heavily by a college coach to play whatever sports.
Wow. Good question.
I haven't asked the question yet, but you see it in front of you.
Yeah, no, I haven't.
What meal are you making them during the in-home visit?
Okay.
And it's not like you need to impress them. They're already impressed with your son or daughter.
Right.
But what is the meal that you're going to say, man, especially if your son or daughter is really leaning towards Tennessee basketball or USC tennis,
yeah,
whatever.
Right.
And you want to make that real, you want to have that impression with the coach.
Well, Dan.
And you cannot farm this out to Mama H.
I'm not farming this out to anybody.
Okay.
You know, as I said earlier, some of my defining qualities, I do like to stick it to the man, right? Just sort of my MO, which is woven into the fabric of my being.
Yeah, everybody knows this about you.
I also tend to overthink things.
Yeah.
So I would probably approach this from a deep psychological standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get too fancy with this dinner, nor do I really want to try and impress who's ever coming over to the house.
Right.
I want to try and get them at their absolute weakest moment, most vulnerable moment, when I can see truly into the soul of the coach. I want something messy and I want something informal. So maybe a big greasy burger.
Okay.
Maybe we make wings. Maybe we buy wings from down the street here.
Mm-hmm.
I want something messy. I want something I can cook on the grill.
You want them rolling up their sleeves.
Rolling up your sleeves.
Yeah.
I've never done a boil, but maybe we do a boil.
Wow,
figure
you're
it out.
Going for it.
Something that's messy, dirty, and informal to get the coach at his or her most vulnerable state.
So I'm giving the coach an opportunity because I know this is apparently the code amongst coaches. They are always supposed to ask for seconds.
Really?
Always ask for seconds because it indicates to the parents, oh my God, this meal you've prepared is so good. It's very flattering to go to somebody's house and say, this meal is so good. Could I possibly have more? Could I have the recipe? And so that is a code amongst coaches. So I'm going to do something that would make it so obvious and I would allow them to ask for seconds. I'm just making a giant pan of lasagna.
Yeah.
And this is why. I don't want to spend too much time away from the coach. I got a lot of questions. How are you going to use my daughter in the triangle offense? How are you going to, is my son only going to play doubles? Is my son a three down running back? Well, I can answer you that right now. Probably not.
No, probably not.
And I just need that one pan, that one, you know, dish meal that you just throw the noodles, you start layering, you get your meat sauce, you get some Italian sausage in there, plenty of cheese. You just throw it in the oven. You don't think about it. Maybe throw together a salad, maybe some roast vegetables. But I don't want to be doing too much. I want to be sitting down with this coach and then just hear the timer go off. And then out comes the lasagna. And then give the opportunity to coach to say, you know what? If you don't mind, could I get that corner piece? if it wouldn't be too much trouble, because this is the best lasagna I've ever had, could you throw me the corner piece? Throw me an edge, that money edge. So I think lasagna is my answer.
All right.
Get to spend optimal amount of time
asking tough questions. Good answer.
Good answer, good answer, good answer. Okay, Ty. This is a question that I find myself having to answer, and I don't answer it well that often. When you're finishing up a meal at a decent or a nicer restaurant, anniversary, or just like, you know what, we need to go on a Friday night date.
Sure,
we
just did it a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
Sure, and it's maybe, it's one of a little hipstery where everything is printed in like a typewriter font on a piece of paper that's 4 inches by 8 inches, that kind of place. They got truffle things, Ty.
Yeah, right.
Server asks you if you'd like to see a dessert menu. Clearing your plates. You guys interested? You want to take a look at the dessert menu? You guys save some room? Save some room for dessert?
Yeah.
And so provided that you are not on a diet, you nor Kate is on a diet where you're not eating sugar. So you'd be open to desserts if they had something interesting or if you were in the mood. Is your response to that question A, you just answer quickly no, that you and Kate have already sort of had the conversation, you're full, let's just get the check. B, what do you think? We're worth a look? Are you deciding on the spot with the server standing there waiting? Are you saying, sure, why not? No matter if you actually mean it. Just to see what the offerings are, because maybe next time you will be interested in that peach cobbler.
Right.
Maybe it's not for tonight, but you like to know what is available at this establishment.
Right.
Do you defer with like, you know what, I'm good. Kate, do whatever. Obviously, if you feel like dessert, get dessert. But I'm good. Is that like your natural response? Or do you just defer to Kate either way?
Yeah, do I win the toss and defer to the second half?
Right. So what is the most common? What is your natural response to that question?
So multiple layers here, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
I went out to dinner for my anniversary recently.
You got to read the room. That's a big part of it.
You got to read the room.
Yeah.
I went out to dinner for my anniversary recently.
Mm-hmm.
I also went out for a belated Valentine's Day dinner recently.
Mm-hmm.
In both those cases, because it was a special occasion, I just went into that experience knowing that we were going to say, yeah, let's take a
head first into dessert. Yeah.
Let's just do this. The special occasion, we're going to do dessert. Mm-hmm. Four course meal. When it's not a special occasion, I think you have to read the room.
Yeah.
Usually when we're in that kind of uncertain territory, usually it's solid wife Kate being the first to speak up. Mm-hmm. And usually she's speaking up in a manner like, yeah, I think we save some room, or yeah, I'll take a look.
I've never considered room, by the way, as I'm eating my patty melt,
never.
As I'm
never
eating my rotisserie chicken, but yeah.
Never in a million years.
Right.
But it's usually her speaking up. Mm-hmm. Usually in that moment, I will defer to her.
Okay.
And sometimes we just come away with coffee. Sometimes we don't come away with anything.
Oh my God, look at you boldly drinking coffee at night.
Usually I'm not the first to speak up. Usually in that moment, I'll defer to her. Yeah.
Okay. I will almost always ask to see the menu for the reason I gave, where even if I'm not feeling like dessert.
Just future research.
Love to know the lay of the land. I take forever at grocery stores.
How do you do with menus just in general? I find I have ADD with menus and I'm very indecisive.
I will always look up the menu before I go somewhere.
Yeah, I could see that.
There are places that, you know, it changes by the night, whatever is fresh and whatever the chef is feeling like in terms of that night. But I generally go in with a great sense. So I'm good with menus.
Can I admit to something here on the podcast since we're running?
Yeah.
Late here today?
Yeah.
I'm very intimidated to place a dinner order in your presence. And
really?
I think
I get that a lot and I don't understand.
I'm very intimidated by you. Just as a
wow. As just because you think I'm going to judge your order?
No, I'm afraid of the Globe tomato situation.
You don't want to mispronounce
something.
I will have a bowl of ramen, please.
Something like that.
I will have your finest bowl of udon.
I'm a little intimidated. I like you very much personally, professionally. This is working out. But when it comes to dining, I'm a little intimidated.
So have you ever ordered either in front of me or in front of anybody else you've been intimidated by something because you were more comfortable pronouncing it more so than that's what you actually wanted?
You know, I can't think up a moment off the top of my head, but it definitely seems like something I would do.
Okay. I'm sorry, like, I can't imagine that we've eaten at so many exotically named dished restaurants, but perhaps we have.
Some of the Mexican places we went to when we were out in Arizona.
There were menu items that threw you?
Do you have a greater command of the Spanish language than I do?
I do.
And there are L's that I may have pronounced that you knew to pronounce as Y's, things
like
that.
Please just tell me that you want... Like, say that, I don't, how does this pronounce? Is it Tlayuda? That kind of thing. And then we'll just go from there. I don't want you to not get something because of your shame over
it. This is a show about honesty. I just had it.
Absolutely, it is. I will always ask for the dessert menu.
Okay.
And I am a little bit bummed that we've gotten to a place where a lot of the time people feel like, dessert menu, which one dessert should we order? Because dessert tastes are pretty varied. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, sometimes you and Kate will get the dessert menus, and she'll be like, should we get the s'mores? Should we just go for it? But meanwhile, you're thinking, God, the blueberry tart is just calling my name. But for whatever reason, we've gotten to this place where you can only order one dessert. I don't know if that's true of you and Kate.
If you're picking one dessert, what percentage of the time would you say you are overruled by your wife?
100. 100.
I would say I am... She is literally undefeated against me.
But I will just order a second dessert. generally that's what will happen.
Okay.
If I'm feeling particularly good about the lemon meringue pie and she's jonesing for the berries or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just like, and throw in the lemon, throw in the slice of lemon meringue pie. Let's just.
Solid Wife Kate is undefeated against me in that conversation.
Yeah. Oh, if you're just ordering the one, you are merely a partner. You are merely a suggestion. You are riding along. You are in the sidecar.
All right. One or two more quick ones here.
If you were immediately thrust into one of the Property Brothers jobs, realtor, or contractor, which do you think you could more plausibly and successfully navigate with zero experience and training?
I think it would have to be the realtor.
Why is that?
You're not delegating
as a realtor. You're just getting it done.
You need to know money.
You need to know market. You need to know negotiation tactics.
I think I could manage the negotiation tactics.
Inspection stuff.
I think I could manage that.
Okay.
I think I could do enough to muddle my way through it. The problem with actually being a contractor is you've got to build stuff, or you got to know what to delegate to people.
You got to hire people. Yeah.
You got to know what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And as a first time homeowner, I'm telling you, I don't know what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
I could talk my way into or out of most situations.
I would be terrible at both of these things. I was just curious to see what you would say.
I would have to. Which one would you pick?
Oh, I would definitely be a realtor.
You got to go
realtor. For that same reason.
You could definitely talk your way into it.
Because
if I were to build
a house with zero training, there would be walls that would not align.
I mean, there's a fatality somewhere in there.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Wait, did we not drywall? Did we not drywall? Is that on me?
I don't even want to look at those insurance premiums.
That would be every day. Termites plural?
Yeah.
Every day. So that's a good answer. Good answer. Final question here, Ty. What is something you definitely don't need to spend a ton on, but prefer the premium experience, excuse me? And what is something you refuse to spend a ton on, but others happily do?
Huh. This is sort of the Apple computer dilemma, right?
Right. Oh, absolutely it is.
That would probably be a good answer.
Well, you spend a ton on electronics gear. You don't settle.
Yeah, anything.
Audio gear.
Anything electronics, audio, that's...
You're setting up a possibly illegal surveillance system.
That's possibly illegal.
Possibly illegal surveillance
anything,
system.
Anything electronic, usually, yeah. I'm going overboard on that. So,
okay. What do you refuse to spend a lot on?
Let's put it this way. Anything that on Amazon also has an Amazon Basics option,
mm-hmm.
I'm almost always going with the Amazon Basics option.
The high floor of Amazon Basics.
Whatever it is, I'm going with Amazon
cable.
Basics.
Do you own any Amazon pieces of clothing?
I don't
have
yet,
Amazon
but I don't.
Brands.
I don't yet, but ooh. I'm not against it.
They're all right. I'm not gonna name drop names because they're not sponsored, but I've needed a couple things in a pinch. They're all right. They do the job. I refuse to spend money on parking.
Parking? Oh, we've
parking.
Talked about this before.
I've driven in so many cities with Jody with an I, which is like, oh, there's just a lot right here. And it's $27. No. Mm-mm. I will feed that meter till I die. I'm not paying money. I'm not paying like premium money for parking ever, ever, ever. Valet? Nope. There's a spot somewhere.
See, I had an awakening.
I don't know why that is.
I had an awakening, Dan, when we were planning our wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Because I very much went into that of the mindset, I'm going to try and keep this as cheap as possible, nice and classy.
For sure.
To reflect our personalities and our lifestyle.
Right.
But I don't want to go overboard, and I certainly don't want to get fleeced on any of these things that we're going to buy.
I'm not paying money for flowers.
Well, and then I learned about the so-called wedding tax. And let me tell you, I came out of that experience willing to pay $50 for just about anything in life. Since then, I have not been the same. Before that, I was a lot more miserly. Now I'm in a spot where it's tougher for me to answer the question.
Right.
But I do like Amazon Basics. Anything with an Amazon Basics option, I determine most of the time I'm not willing to spend it. I'm going to go Amazon Basics.
Would you advise somebody to not have a wedding?
Yes.
I love the pregnant pause there. You would advise somebody City Hall and then like just like rent out the backyard of a restaurant or something.
If you can
with a
do
bunch
it.
Of friends. If you can swing it.
If you can swing it without offending family.
Yep.
100% go for it.
Have 12 people in your backyard. If somebody in your family insists on a proper ceremony.
Use that money towards a house, towards a car, towards whatever. A
honeymoon.
A trip around the world.
Yeah. Consider that.
If you can get out. I mean, do you feel the same?
Absolutely.
100%.
And right? I loved my wedding.
So did I.
I had a phenomenal time at your wedding, at my wedding, whatever. But I would advise that. Just in terms of the headache and just what you could put that money towards.
Did you have
one day.
Did you have a moment when you were planning your wedding where you looked at Jody with an eye and said,
fake my own death, change my identity?
Did you ever look at her during the wedding planning process and say, are we sure we want to do this? Like, maybe, is it too late?
What are we doing? No, I did not have that moment. It was a great process. But if you have the freedom to do the City Hall or backyard thing and then just do a thing with a bunch of friends, I'd say go for that.
Go for that, man.
I would say go for that. In terms of something that I insist on spending a premium for that I don't need to, it's always food. It's always, always food. And it's always, I want to try as much as possible at restaurants, if that is not exceedingly obvious already.
Yeah.
I want, if there are three appetizers that appeal to me and I'm with one, two, three other people and everybody's just like, what appetizer should we get? Like, no, let's get A, B, and C because who cares? Let's just try it all. That to me is where I'm overspending. Always, always.
You know, one other area that I'm finding now as a homeowner, I just spent an arm and a leg to get new smoke detectors.
Really?
I did.
Oh, man.
And I didn't need to. I'm finding that other things in that same vein, like just preventative home type stuff.
Right.
They really sell me on the value of peace of mind.
That's a huge thing. As I am now dealing with childcare, Ty, you're not paying for childcare. You're paying for peace of mind.
You're paying for that peace of mind.
Yeah.
That's where they get you.
Super cheap in New York, childcare. Yeah. Super duper. You wouldn't think it, but it is crazy cheap. Oh.
All right. So
that's
here's
it.
The deal. You had all these questions for me.
Yeah.
You put me to the test. I'm running on E here. I got to get some food in my belly.
Same.
All because of your hard-hitting questions. Next week, it's going to be my turn. I've got some good ones for you.
Yes.
I started thinking them up today.
Good. Great. College football, non-college football alike.
If you haven't already, please do subscribe to the show. We're at solidverbal.com. You can also sign up for our newsletter out there. We've got shirts in the pipeline. I am excited about these shirts.
Yeah, they're pretty good, right?
Very good. So
you wanted to change some text on one of them. We'll circle back to that.
I'm having second thoughts about my second thoughts.
Oh, okay, great.
I think it's good. So we've got those coming forward. Sign up for the newsletter, solidverbal.com. We'll mail out anytime we've got new shirts. Also, anytime we've got new announcements. We won't spam you, but if you're into the show, it's free to subscribe. Check it out. Don't forget, you can also find us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. There's also a subreddit started by Verballers for Verballers at reddit.com/r/solidverbal, where you can join the community, talk amongst friends about the show, make fun of us. Whatever you want to do out there, it's free country, man. Do whatever you want. We don't care.
If you've learned nothing else after this show, Matt Campbell, good coach.
Good coach.
Also, nobody dislikes the person that says, you know what? Let's also do the burrata.
Let's do it.
You know what? Let's also do the cobbler. Yeah, let's go crazy. Let's get the cobbler too.
And don't forget, if you like the show, leave us a review.
It's a good person.
Leave us a review. iTunes.com/solidverbal, I think still works. We're on iTunes. We're on Spotify. We're on Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere you can find podcasts, you can find Solid Verbal. That's all I got, Dan.
Here's my final question to you, Ty.
Yeah.
If people started tuning out thinking we were just plugging reviews and subscriptions, would you say that you have been flirted with since getting married with certainty? This person, man, woman, whoever, pet, I have been flirted with definitively.
Yeah.
Your answer is yes?
No, I'm saying, was your answer yes?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Definitively.
I say definitely because I'm a stupid, stupid dude who probably takes way too much as flirtation. But in my mind, well, in person, probably. I will not say definitively yes. Online, yes.
I will say this. In
the
general,
the DMs have been slud into.
In general, and the solid wife Kate would back me up on this one.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea what was going on around.
Oh, I tell Jody with an eye all the time, like, this person just DM me and like it's getting, I don't know, it's weird. Look at this.
I have no idea my place in the universe.
Right.
And in general, I'm pretty clueless.
Okay.
And so I think there was a lot of that going on before I was married.
And you just had no
concept. That I had no idea about.
Hot commodity here.
Yeah, that's right. The solid wife had to tell me what was going on.
Wow.
So
it wasn't even just flirtation. It was like you were being hit on.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I guess I'm going to assume that to some degree that's continued. I'm just not paying any attention to it.
I
wasn't paying attention
confidence.
To it before.
Oh my gosh. Ty, first you call yourself a rebel. Now you consider yourself a flirtation magnet?
I mean, that's what goes on.
Wow.
I have no idea, to be honest, but maybe.
I just wanted, I was curious if you had to like diffuse the situation.
No, there have been, no. No bombs have needed to be diffused.
Okay. It's good to know. I love hearing that.
Well, Dan, we've covered some ground here, haven't we?
I think so.
We're going to be back next week. It's a long slog of a college football offseason. We're going to do our best to try and make this as fun as possible. Stay tuned to all the social channels. Sign up for that newsletter if you haven't already. Leave us a review if you like the show. Daniel, you enjoy the rest of your week and your weekend, okay?
Hey, you too. And order those desserts, Ty. Come on.
Get on those desserts. I'm going to go get some food now after this.
Yep.
Fuel myself up for the long night of editing that surely is in front of me. And I'll talk to you, I'm sure, tomorrow. I'll talk to everyone out there, in a week, right?
Yep, next week.
In the meantime, for that guy over there, Dan, for myself, Ty, we'll talk to y'all soon. Stay solid.
Peace.